This is a production of Cornell University.
EA meeting, December 17th, 2008.
Good afternoon, and welcome to today's employee assembly meeting, Wednesday, December 17th, 2008. At this time, I'd like to call this meeting to order and ask if there's any late additions to our agenda. Okay, we have a tight schedule. We have a presentation later on in our meeting. I'm going to try to fly through our agenda today. And I'll move on to the report from the chair. I'm not sure if everybody had a chance to read President Sporton's letter he sent yesterday. But along the same topic, we did meet with Mary Opperman yesterday. And I have some things to report. It is a challenging time here at the university. Being an employee assembly representative makes it even more difficult, because this is the time when our staff really need us. They're going to look up to us. They're going to come to us for information. And my concern is that we have the right, correct information to pass along to them. President Scorin informed everyone that we're facing up to a 10% correction in our annual operating budget over the next few years. And I want to just clear up what that means. It doesn't mean a 10% cut across the board. It means overall, the entire university budget for operating expenses has to be reduced by 10%. That's going to get dispersed to all the different units and colleges. For example, College X could receive a 6% cut, where College Y could receive a 12% cut in their budget. And how it's being handled is, it's not employee headcount only. Each unit, everyone who is being dispersed a cut, is able to make up their own scenarios on how they're going to handle their cuts. So for instance, College X, to handle 6% cut in their operating budget, will come up with various scenarios. We may reduce travel, we may close out this program initiative, we may have employee layoffs. And those scenarios will then get approved by the provost on how each area is going to handle these cuts. So it's important to not pass the information along falsely when asked, that it isn't 10% cuts across the board. And it isn't immediately. It's over gradually, over a year, 2 years, 3 years. And it's all specific to the department or the unit or the college. Anybody have any questions on that part of it? It's pretty important to understand.
Does it work the same way for units, like non-colleges? And
it depends on where the highest jurisdiction of that budget is. If it happens to be OHR, and then there's different units in there, it's going to be the OHR budget. I don't know if that's going to be then pushed to each unit, but it's going to be dependent upon the administrators of that area.
Just real quick, to make sure things are consistent, would it make sense to, if people are asked, instead of trying to explain it all, either one, they can send them to the EA site, because these minutes are going to be there and your explanation is going to be there?
Yes.
Or are there some central office, either through the president's or whatever, information out there somewhere on another site that we could send them to?
Right.
Maybe it's safer than trying to explain it all. Just,
definitely. You know. It's a great question, and that's what I wanted to help clear up, and I'm going to talk about it more later on. Do your best to answer questions. Mm-hmm. The last thing we want to do is turn away anybody who comes to us. We're not the experts in the area, so if you feel like you can't answer the question, point them in the right direction. I would start with your local HR unit or representative, and if that doesn't work, then the overall Office of Human Resource. They also, the deans and the administrators of each area are going to know a lot of the answers. There's always, you know, Mary is willing to meet with individuals, but yes, let's try to answer the questions if we can. But again, I don't want anybody to really get involved if you're not 100% certain of what to give them. We don't want to falsely spread information that could be misinterpreted. That could happen anyway, but we want to be very careful, because this is a really challenging time, and we have to handle it delicately. President Skorton also mentioned that any reasonable solution will affect real programs, real jobs, and real people. This statement, this line is realistic. There's no way that we can walk around and say that we are not going to be affected. Every area is going to be affected. It's important to not pretend that we're not. The university is doing well, but there are going to be some cuts somewhere along the way if they haven't already happened. It's also good to know that the senior administration team and President Skorton and our new provost, Kent Fox, are very committed to workforce. That's a top priority. They're going to do everything in their power to protect our interest as employees. But again, it's still uncertain. We're not sure. They're not sure exactly how it's going to trickle down. I don't know if Governor Patterson just released the new state budget cut city.
His proposal, yeah.
So that has a lot to do with it. That's going to then come down to the college, to the university, and then our administrators will be able to look at that and plan accordingly. We're in a leadership role, and it places us directly in line with the concerns of our colleagues, employees, and number one, we must remain empathetic to them. You could be approached by an employee that is in fear of losing their job. That happens. We don't want anybody to panic. That's why the spreading of this information properly and correctly is very key. We want to welcome the employees, anybody, even the faculty, students, listen to them, understand them, and try to answer the question if you can. Again, we want to empathize with their situation and do our best to point them in the right direction. There's a couple offices that are available to help, and it's not necessarily in this order. It depends on the issue that comes to you. WELQ is one area someone can go to. WDF, Workforce
Diversity, Equity, and Life Quality.
Right.
Our office.
EAP, depending on the situation and how the person is handling
confidential counseling. They're also part of our office now.
Great. Yeah, there's more. Again, the local HR units, but sometimes that doesn't work or they already have gone there. So then you have the university HR office. And then if there are employees who have experienced layoffs, again, be empathetic towards them, point them in the right direction. We're not experts. We don't know the reasons for it. We don't know what determined their being selected as being laid off. But there is a grievance policy that you can point them to.
Yes, they can go to the ombudsman.
To the what?
Ombudsman's office. To get guidance as to how to potentially grieve a matter. And they will be assigned a one-to-one case manager who will also work on it, and or some post-termination counseling. They'll be in the process, direct people dealing one-on-one, but they're also the usual university resources.
Right, and just point them there. We don't want to get involved in the reasons for why they were selected to have this unfortunate happening happen to them. Yes, Pat?
One other thing I would like to mention too, Brian, is the Office of Human Resources, in conjunction with all the colleges, are meeting on a regular basis to discuss layoffs.
Okay.
And those candidates who have been identified for layoff, we're working very closely together to see if we can find appropriate places for those folks to go. So if we could let folks know if you are in a layoff situation,
right,
we're working on it.
Yes, and Mary also explained to us yesterday in our meeting with her that there are jobs open at Cornell, and Cornell employees, current and layoff status, do have the first pick of those positions, and everything is being done to help that process work. There's not enough open jobs for everyone who may be looking for a job, but again, that's where your performance, what type of person you are, your skills, and the type of job will come into play and benefit you. I guess if you look at it as a Cornell's big at hockey, and you look at the whole hockey, I mean, we're talking the stadium, the marketing, the players themselves, the ice, the equipment, and this hockey franchise has to take a cut. Well, you're not going to go and take up 25% of the ice to save cost on that, because it's a business need that has to be there. It has to exist. The equipment has to exist. So where can you make these cuts? Do you cut your players? Do you cut the concessions? Do you cut your marketing? So it's up to the leaders of that hockey franchise to determine where the cuts come from. And that's what's happening here. They're going to come up with a scenario, and I don't know the details of the scenarios. There's going to be many of them, and they're going to be very diverse and different, and it's going to be up to the administrators and them to figure out where are you going to make the cuts. And that's important to pass along and understand. I'm approached by staff that feel that they've already had an employee left, couldn't replace that employee. What are they going to do? Brian, what if they cut another one of our department's positions? We're not going to be able to function. And I can't promise them anything. I don't know. But if the business need is there and that's a functioning unit, I doubt that area is going to get another cut, because then you wouldn't be able to function. So there's a lot going on, and that's why, you know, just use common sense when you try to handle these issues that come to us. We don't know all the answers. Mary has offered to help us however she can. She's willing to meet with us more frequently and do whatever else it takes to help us assist staff in their concerns in the future. Any questions from anybody, or anything anybody wants to add? Yes, Julie.
When they're making these cuts, is there what's like the time frame in terms of, you know, if they're going to lay people off, if they'll give them, is there severance, or is there, you said that there are case managers and things like that, but is it immediate or?
There have been some positions already laid off. Some may not happen. If they do happen, it's tough to say. You know, will it be 2 months from now, 6 months from now? Yeah, I can't answer it. I can't answer that. But some have happened already. Not many. And I don't know the exact details of that and why it happened, but they have. It's when there's big budget cuts, somehow costs have to be recovered to make up for what was lost. We took big hits in the research area where we have commitments to initiatives that we have to keep going. And if we've lost funding for research and science, we have to make that funding up somewhere. So it's a good question, but it's difficult to say. Yes, Pat?
If I could also, I'm an HR person, so I can answer some of this.
Good.
The process takes some time, each unit and department is being asked to kind of look within to see where they can realize some cost savings, and if in fact that does include layoffs, there is a process that needs to be gone through, so you have to identify an actual plan of how that layoff is going to look, and then those individuals who would be identified for layoff, that plan has to go through another process going through the college or the university's main HR office to agree or disagree with the plan. And then the minimum requirement for Cornell for layoff is 30 days.
Mm-hmm.
But I know for us in Cal's, we prefer to give 60 or more. So if in fact it is identified, you know, if you say
that was specifically, the time frame?
That's the period once those plans are identified, approved, and then implemented, the minimum amount of time that you would be given is 30 days.
No, thank you. That's a perfect example of a question that, Julie, you know, if you ask your local HR, maybe the HR has more information than I do. I am certain that they would. Any other questions about that? Sorry I took up so much time with feel it's important and it's happening. Okay, we're going to move on to the report from our employee elected trustee, Beth McKinney.
I'm here. I could move over there. I just didn't know if more people were showing up.
I think it's...
But they're not, so I'll
move. For you.
Okay, and then I'll come back and get my lunch. Between the last meeting and this meeting, I did go to... Get that? I went to... the interim trustee meetings, which were committee meetings, and I only went to one meeting because I was only on one committee that was meeting, which is the Buildings and Properties Committee, and it was a very short meeting. We got out 20 minutes early because there's nothing to approve. I just want to echo what Brian said, and that is, as decisions are being made, as things are being figured out, we as a university are learning immediately. Anything that I've gotten on the trustee list goes out to the university 5 minutes later. So there's nothing, there's a lot of transparency, but there's also a lot of unknowns, and that's the biggest message that we're all getting. That's the end of my report.
Thank you.
I think there's actually room for two people there.
Is there?
For one of the chairs over.
Okay, Jason, you have the next report from our student assembly representative.
Emily couldn't attend, but she said that at their last meeting, they finalized rules for directly electing the student assembly president and vice president, and they met with President Scorton and discussed his visit to Iran and the economics of the university.
If you didn't know, the student assembly is looking to have in their the chair and vice chair elected by the entire student body versus the student assembly. And I mean, something we can consider also, but that's for another day. There's no report from the UA representative. They haven't met. There's no report from our representative to the Faculty Senate. They have not met. There's no report from the Staff Climate Survey Steering Committee. They haven't met. And then we're going to move on to the approval of our minute, our meeting minutes of December 3rd, 2008. I'll give everybody a quick minute to look at these.
I have a correction.
Okay. Or we'll hold on that motion.
Can we permanently strike section 11K? This is combined with a charter review for a previous meeting and is not appearing on our agendas anymore. And if it appeared on the last agenda,
where is it?
Right there, the ad hoc membership review. That is not a separate entity anymore. It's combined with the charter review.
Yeah, to make sense.
In light of that, I would modify my motion to approve the minutes as amended.
So I have a second?
Second.
Okay, all in favor of approving the meeting minutes with the amendment of striking out section 11K?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Abstained? Okay, so we'll pass our meeting minutes for December 3rd meeting. We'll move on to our committee reports. We'll start with the executive committee. I'd like to thank everybody who inquired about being selected as our representative to next year, 2009's presidential inauguration of Barack Obama. Alan Mittman was selected. he will be attending and chaperoning students. I was not able to go. Leon Lawrence is already going for another role. When we met with Mary and she saw that on the agenda, presidential inauguration, she looked at us, said, I'm not going through this again. Too soon. And we had to stop her. And, nope, this is for Barack Obama, not for President David Sporton. And a new replacement. But she was too pleased to hear that we did have a representative going. And again, I like to thank everyone who inquired about it. At the executive committee report, we did discuss our goals. Last meeting, I asked that we all think about ideas for our goals and possibly shifting them. We're going to leave this up to future discussions. I didn't receive anything from anybody, but we did talk about them at the executive meeting. It's possible that we don't have to reshuffle goals. Maybe we just keep them where they are because all of our top goals do support what is going on now, communication to staff, getting the information out there, tracking the incidents that come in. But we'll leave it for further discussion. We also brought up the idea of having a winter retreat here on campus, possibly just extending our regular meeting 2-3 hours longer. Maybe getting Jim Sheridan to come again, and then that's a perfect time to do our goals. Maybe he can help us see if we want to reshift them or redefine them. What does anyone think about that? Sound like a good idea? Really?
Yeah, I can possibly look in the space museum for a week.
Okay, if we can't find something.
We have a last second. Jim Sheridan probably has a conflict a couple months out.
Yeah, if we're all in favor of it, I would say let's try to do it in January. The sooner the better. See if you want to try to find a date.
I'll look on the calendar.
And then Julie, you can work together, maybe get back to us.
Yeah.
If he gets a date for Jim's availability and you get a place for us, just let us know.
Nice. And that could work because we need a space for January 21st meeting.
Yeah.
One way.
Sure.
So is that the first day I should look into? January 21st.
Yeah, absolutely.
I see Jim tomorrow if you want me to. I see Jim tomorrow if you want me to ask him to see Jim. I see him tomorrow. I have a training with him.
Okay. Well, I'll send him an email that you can follow up with him.
Okay.
Yeah, and I just will need the time, specific block of time.
Okay. Probably, I would, to be safe, till 4. Our meeting would be 12:15 till 4, and we could do it after that meeting. The Cost Savings and Efficiencies Committee that Beth and I are representing staff on has been meeting regularly. Every suggestion that has come in is being analyzed and looked at by the appropriate people. Reports are due very soon. And I brought up at the exact meeting, we discussed feedback. People that submit a suggestion for cost savings or efficiencies ideas, they want some feedback. And I did bring it up. I believe Alan brought this up. And they will do something. There will be something online that people can go and look at the suggestions and how they were handled. Don't know exactly the format, but something will. They do understand the importance and that this is something we would like to have happen. And I'll keep everyone updated on that. Also, I brought up the idea of choosing some of the best suggestions, and that the employee assembly could possibly thank the person if they were not anonymous. And that's still up for further discussion. Depending on the subcommittees, let's say IT, for instance, if they happen to identify some real concrete suggestions that they can work on, and then we can, that was an idea we talked about at the exec committee meeting last week. Okay, any questions for me or any of the other executive committee members like to add anything? Okay, move on to the staff award recognition committee. We will be meeting mid to the end of January. We're going to actually, because of the transition in the interim chair, there have been issues with relaying the messages on to the nominators of the George Peter Award and letting them know the status of their nominee. People are kind of held out in limbo. I sent this application 8 months ago. I haven't heard anything. We're going to be readdressed and anyone who wasn't officially closed, we're going to bring out on the table again, and we're going to look at them. And then we're going to come up with a process to notify the nominators along the way of what's happening with their candidate. And I think that is only fair. Any questions for that? Okay. Move on to the Communications Committee report. Jason.
Okay. We met yesterday in Emerson Hall. Bill Liddick gave an update on the staff climate survey and explained that the survey would not meet the same needs as an EA-specific survey and that we should continue to explore our own survey of staff. And on that note, then, Julie is going to follow up with Yasmin Miller of the Cornell Survey Research Institute to attend our next communications meeting to discuss the options and costs of an SRA-coordinated survey. If the costs aren't appropriate for the EA, we may pursue other options of surveying the staff, but it's something that we're going to continue to discuss in committee. We discussed the possibility of an opt-in EA employee email list where employees could get more up-to-date, timely information directly from the EA via an opt-in method. The idea was received well in the committee, and we're going to continue to discuss the possibility and development of that. Several committee members gave a history of past EA online forums and open discussions, and it was suggested to talk to Donna Goss and Peggy Beach for additional history of what the EA communication outreach did in the past. The committee recommends to discontinue the Welcome to Cornell tabling for new employees and replace it with an individualized direct Welcome to Cornell by committee and or EA members. The tabling has been staff and time intensive and hard for committee and EA members to commit to the time of staffing the table for the 1 to 2 times per month that the Welcome to Cornell event has been occurring. The committee will develop an outreach to new employees, including tracking the responses, maybe getting inserts into their Welcome to Cornell packets, and exploring possible online and or video opportunities of something like Welcome to Cornell, Welcome to the Employee Assembly, and give the new employees a great introduction to what we are. So we think we can probably have a bigger impact by getting more information in their packets and then a direct follow-up.
Then your radio voice on video.
And we're following up on the appointment letter process. It appears that letters are getting to the appointee but not to the unit publications coordinators via press release as originally intended out of past committee communication committee work. I followed up with the Office of the Assemblies, and we've got a few things to iron out back in committee for that. And later on, we'll get an update on how the staffing process plays into that. That was it. So it was kind of action-packed. We are planning on meeting again soon in January, and we'll be focusing primarily probably on the survey and the opt-in email list and maybe start to work on the how we'll replace the Welcome to Cornell table.
Thank you, Beth.
Yesterday, during the meeting with Mary Offerman, the idea of forums came up.
I was going to go back because I skipped it.
Okay, never mind.
But thank
I didn't
you.
Know if that was a communication.
No, I just okay. skipped. I drew.
Never mind.
Yes, Al.
Very brief, not to take a lot of time. Could you state, Bill, tersely, why the climate survey will not be useful for the proposed EA survey?
Not that it won't be useful, but when we were talking in the communications meeting yesterday, it was really two different levels. The climate survey is going to be obviously asking people about the climate of Cornell, where are the things that we're doing well, where are the things we're not doing well. And it's going to be a baseline that they'll use over the years to keep judging. Right. What we were talking about, the EA survey is specifically questions about the EA. Do you know about the EA? Do you know what we do? That type of thing. Those two things don't mesh together.
Okay.
That's what we're talking
Thank
about.
Angela?
In light of the hiring freeze, are they still, the Welcome to Cornell event, I guess, I mean, are they, how is that going to be the hiring freeze? And I just thought,
that's a very good point. It didn't even occur to me. Yeah, I should probably start to see those drop off of the schedule.
Cornell again.
Yes, Pat, maybe Pat can answer.
I came up for some assistance there. The hiring freeze is a 90-day, well, right now it's till the end of March, but that's typically for core-funded, what we call core-funded positions. There are still positions that are funded by sponsored funds, specific grants, endowments that are still being allowed to be posted and externally applied for. So there still will be folks hired, and they will not be subject to the hiring pause. It's only those that are on the base Cornell funds or core funds. So there, I think there still would be a need, but of course I can't imagine
they might
two
not
times a month.
Yeah, probably.
Good question, though. Okay. I'm going to move back up. At the executive committee report or meeting, we did bring up and discuss how we want to be there for staff. And one of the best ways of doing that is to hold some forums sometime in the spring. We struggled with the theme of the forum, and which is surprising, but to just have a forum when there's still so many unanswered and unknowns is difficult. So what we decided is we want to do this. This is the direction we want to go, but we want to hold off till some more. The state budget cuts just got released yesterday. Let's hold off a little more and be ready as there's more information. And maybe we're impacted more than we thought we were gonna. Maybe we're impacted less, and maybe one area is impacted the most. We want to hold off and see if there's more of a theme or a topic. Brought this up with Mary. Let her know the EA is ready whenever she needs us or the university needs us. We're going to wait and work together, communicate, and be there. She also, again, said that she would get senior administration personnel to be there. She said, Brian, you don't want to be there answering questions. People are going to yell at you, throw big issues that you can't answer. We'll do it in collaboration with the EA and the senior administration. Possibly if Mary wants to be there, every one of them, possibly we have Steve Golding come for one. That's why we're going to wait and see what the best theme is, what I call it. Maybe not be the right terminology, and then we can move forward. Might be a good idea that we start looking at places. Although it may also be too premature to start saving the date. But maybe we'll move that to old business next meeting. Okay, thanks, Beth, for reminding me. We're going to move to Alan in the Finance Committee report.
I'll just make one final call for any expenses incurred with respect to the energy fair. So far, I received reports of totaling about $2,400, including the linens, the garage permits, the signer, the mailing, the cost of printing the programs, the plaque for Lynette Chappelle Williams, and what I believe to be the net amount of the audio expenditure after an adjustment. So I do know of one further number that Jason is going to provide me with for printing the flyers that were mailed around. So if anyone else has any other expenses that they're aware of, please let me know, and I anticipate in the January meeting being able to report the final amount. But that's what I have so far.
Seems like we're doing okay. Cornell Dining. I believe we didn't sell enough of what we committed to sell, so there may be, is that correct, Amy?
Yeah, it's like $400.
Yeah, there may be something around $400.
I don't know it, but I do have it.
Okay.
And Amy, was there a charge for the videotaping?
I haven't seen it still.
Yeah, I forgot if they said they did it for free for us.
From what I remember, it was someone wanted to do that
anyway,
so they took it.
Normally we pay media services to come and record it, and then they give it to us to post on the web. But this time could be different because it was bigger than.
Yep. So we hear from them. Yeah, I have to go back through and send Bill some of my thoughts on the preparation of the energy fair also. That'll get me back into my documentation that I have after my computer crashed, and maybe think of something else for you. Yes, Bill?
Was there an expense for the use of the building itself when it's in there? Barton Hall?
I don't have an expense for that. Was there a Barton Hall?
There was.
Come through the ticket order system, like the building codes and all that is a very internal type process.
Yeah.
We did get a bill from the beginning, but whether that turned out to be the final bill after everything was said and done, I haven't heard.
Okay.
I can give you what I had. It was a month before the event that we got from like Goodman.
Yeah, wasn't it?
From Barton.
500?
I think it's 1,000.
1,000?
999 or something.
Okay. But still, we're looking good. Okay, Pat, the emergency grant fund.
Yeah, just real quick, we met last week,
yeah.
And very briefly kind of discussed where we were going, what we were trying to do, had some goals. I think I mentioned this last time. The new thing that has come through, though, is the account that we were talking about for Kelly Spicer to enable employees to donate to the emergency grant fund to their giving. That account has been set up. Peggy shared that with me yesterday. So it looks like we're moving ahead in that direction, and there is more to come on that. The EGF is still going to talk about how that will work, how it will apply to the fund, and how we are going to rewrite the procedures and the protocols and the charter itself. So
okay.
We're all working on it. Our next meeting, I believe, is January 8th.
Oh, great. Beth?
Just to add to that, I got an email today from Kelly and Mary Behrens about the staff giving, saying that it's paused. So I don't know what that means, but with all the turmoil going around, they're not going to release a big campaign to raise money quite yet. So you might have more time to figure it out.
Yeah, and actually I think Kelly's big concern was making certain that this account was established and that it was
right.
An agreed-upon concept. And I think that went through without any difficulty at all. But we still have a lot of work to
right.
do. And we're going to kind of work together to do the charter procedures, application, et cetera. So
okay.
We've got our work cut out.
Great. Julie?
And I think we'll see us get further ahead, perhaps communicating with the communication committee, and we can coordinate how we would do our outreach to staff to make them aware of it. Was the idea that it's a line item that people would, Kelly explained a little bit of how this would work, but it's kind of a line item?
Basically their giving campaign, they're going to be identifying three sources or three opportunities that staff can donate, one of which is the EGF. So they've got to work with Cornell payroll, and there's a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff that they're going to need to do in their office. Basically, what we would be looking at, and it would be in conjunction with the Office of Assemblies, is the actual management of that account, you know, the funds that are going in, once they've come in, how they're going to be dispersed. So we have two accounts right now in the EGF. One is an operating and one is a interest-bearing savings type of account. This will be a third account that will be established under the EGF through the Office of Assemblies. So, again, we're still just getting started, and I'm really excited. We've got a great group of folks, and I can't wait to move ahead with this.
Great. Sounds good. And now the money that's already there, is that going to be separate?
It will be. The operating fund itself will be kept separate from the interest-bearing account, and then the third account, the actual gift account, that's what we're calling it, that's going to be an unrestricted gift account. And those dollars, once they've come in, then we will identify how those will be used.
Okay.
So they may end up being transferred into the operating account to give the grant award out. But we've got to kind of, again, we'll work all that out.
Sure. Sounds
okay?
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you, Pat. The personnel policy will be meeting January 6th. Now we're going to move on to IOC. Peter, do you have some reports?
We have a, thanks to Ari's hard work, we have a kind of finalized staffing process in place. A person who submits a form online to join the EA committee, that entry goes into a ticket system. I receive an email when that happens, and I can go and I can approve that person. And then when I do so, the Office of Assemblies, they get received an email, and they can then send out a letter of approval to that person, and that happens pretty quick turnaround time. And then for whatever reason, you know, I don't want to approve the person immediately, then I can discuss with the executive committee about a particular individual. But for the most part, I just go in there and I can approve them, and they receive a letter fairly quickly. So thank you guys for standing up. It's very easy to use.
It works very well.
Yes.
Great. A quick question. I understood from previous conversations that you actually, the chair approves the members. Has that changed now so that the IOC chair is doing that?
Yep.
And then who signs the letter?
Brian does.
Right, Peter appoints him, I sign the letter.
Okay.
It's, Peter works with me.
Okay.
When he gets it, it's, we both are in communication with him. And I mean, right now we don't have competition. We're just trying to fill the seat, so it's kind of a...
Yeah, right. You know, Brian is a lot more in this place, so there's a faster guaranteed turnaround time if I do it, because I get the emails and I just do it at my desk. So
okay. We had an application.
Why this makes sense from our office's perspective is in all the other assemblies, because staffing is a significant responsibility, it's delegated to one officer of the assembly. That would normally be what Peter's role would be, but
sure.
The way it's written in the charter, the only person who has unambiguous staffing authority is Brian,
right.
But there's nothing that says he can't delegate that.
Right.
The review process to someone else.
Okay, that's why I was asking, because we're working on the charter, I just want to make sure that's in there.
Yeah, and in fact, in the system, what we mentioned, but Brian also does have access to the tickets if
yes.
He needs to look at them.
It's great, it was a quick turnaround. One got lost in the cracks, for whatever reason, but we've technically, it's been dealt with and taken care of, so we should be rolling forward.
Can you share with us any new committee members?
Do you have a list on you?
I don't have a list on me.
The education committee is pretty, that was there.
Yeah, we've got.
Is there a Lori Kimball?
I don't know.
That has joined?
Which name that didn't ring a bell to me.
Lori Kimball?
No.
Actually, she was interested in personnel policy.
Yeah. Have her go, maybe.
I did. I asked her to do it. So.
If you want to send.
Okay.
If you want to send me an email, I can check to see if that name was in the list.
Okay.
I don't think so. The other thing, just to follow up, Jason mentioned it before, and we're trying to coordinate, that appointment letters, not only the staff member would be receiving the appointment letter, but we had a press release that was supposed to be sent to the communications director of that member's unit, as well as the paw print, you might not have gotten that, but I think that's the final thing that we'll be working out, so that people know who these committee members are and when they join.
And do I also understand that the chair of the committee also gets a copy of the appointment letter?
They should, yeah.
Okay, because I think that has happened in the past. Mm-hmm. I just want to be sure that the chair should know. Okay.
All right.
Perfect. Thank you.
That's it for me. Awesome.
Okay, we're going to put our agenda on rest. We only have three more committee reports to get through. So we're going to move on to our business of the day.
Actually, she's late for two more.
There she is. Still waiting on one more?
No.
You're ready?
Yeah?
Well, the floor is yours. Thank you for coming. It's a presentation from Human Resources on the Disability Strategic Plan.
It's actually not totally human resources.
Okay.
It's a collaborative effort between facilities, student disability services, and human resources.
Outstanding. Well, we're glad to have you. Would you like to come out of this side, or are you good where you are?
I'm good.
The room is yours.
I won't bother putting my shoes back on because I'll take longer.
So, okay, what I'll do for give you an update or sort of give you the background in terms of this whole effort that's been going on. About 2004, a group came together to kind of look at what we were doing in terms of addressing the needs of the individuals with disabilities on the campus. Partly motivated because it's the right thing to do. The other part was because our IV colleagues were being audited in terms of their disability access. And one by one, they were being picked off by Department of Justice or Department of Education Office of Civil Rights. And it narrowed down so we were the only ones left. It seemed like it was a good time to kind of think proactively about addressing the issue. And so we started meeting. A number of things came out about it, this being one of the things and probably most significant that's come about. We actually don't see this as a standalone effort. As you know, we've had a diversity effort that's been going on for almost 9 years, almost 10 years actually. And so this is actually, we see as being part of our overall diversity efforts, just like a subset that we wanted to address. So what we've developed is a framework for looking at our disability access issues, and it takes into account all three of the populations, faculty, staff, and students. It's designed to do that. So I want to share with you who is part of the group. Okay. And Andrea Henley-Mott, who's with Facilities Management, is actually the ADA coordinator for Facilities. We're going to be going back and forth in terms of giving you the information.
Sure. And the other person that is part of our ADA coordination team is Kathy Stakey, who is the Director of Student Disability Services. So between Lynette, Kathy, and myself, we are part of the three-person ADA coordination team. And we'll describe that. We'll also talk about our business case for this comprehensive strategic framework that does go beyond being afraid of being sued. That certainly is a motivator, but there are many other aspects of it. We're going to talk about the components of the framework, and the actual copy of the framework is what the other attachment that you have had. But it's comprehensive. I think we're at 30-some pages. Next slide is a next step in our. We're not going to talk about schedule because, of course, we're off a little bit, but we'll be talking about our stakeholder review for the implementation of this framework. The members of the team. We actually have two levels of the team. One is Kathy and Andrea and I, and then we actually have an executive level group as well that includes the people that you see listed there with Steve Golding, Mary George Opperman, Susan Murphy. Carolyn Ainsley had been part of the group. Hugh Wong and Michelle Moody Adams, and then there's Kathy, Andrea and I, as well as Jim Gibbs, who's within the facilities group, as well as Edmund Dubin. So those are the individuals that we've been sort of going back to get feedback and guidance in terms of what needs to be done. The business case. There are many aspects of that. First of all, being the demographics. There are, and a lot of times people will say to us, well, how many people with disabilities are on campus? And, you know, there is that balance between people with obvious disabilities who use, wheelchairs for mobility or have other types of conditions that you can see, which is a population that's growing and that will continue to grow on this campus. But the population of people with non-obvious disabilities, non-visible disabilities, is expensive. Those include people with a variety of different health conditions as well as orthopedic issues that you may think or may not, people with learning disabilities, people who have other types of conditions that are not always obvious, to take advantage of the disability accessibility elements of this comprehensive framework. Just commitments of diversity.
As I mentioned before, this is actually considered part of our overall diversity effort. And if you go to the provost webpage, it's one of the areas that's actually listed in terms of talking about how do we address our community of individuals with disabilities who are both faculty and staff as well as students as well. So we're addressing it as part of a larger framework.
And we all talk about compliance with the law. The since 1970.
Employee Assembly Meeting, December 17th, 2008, continues.
That's a focus point. The other universities have been told, Yankee Stadium was told to get it back together some years ago.
Yankee Stadium, and then there's been a large case with the University of Michigan.
Yeah.
Because they had undergone renovations, and the renovations did not increase the numbers. Well, and the University of Michigan certainly football team gets a couple more people than our football team.
Just a couple.
But that doesn't mean anything in terms of an overall access plan to be able to do that. So the physical accessibility component, educational programs and services that include courses and workshops beyond just our core
programs, but things like adult education, cooperative extension, distance learning programs, things for employees as well. It's really looking at every aspect of the other educational programs and services. Technology, it includes aspects of our web accessibility and making sure, and there has been on in the plans of web accessibility policy, at the policy level, that has been, I don't know where it is currently. Do you know?
No, it's gone to the executive level of the review, and I think there's still dialogue going on.
About how that and what impact that has in terms of making sure that every new web page is designed in an acceptable manner, but it also has to do with renovation of existing web pages, which is where I think it's getting caught up a bit. Next page, I think, is yours.
All right, and then the other three areas in terms of communication, making sure that information that's shared throughout the university is done in a way that people can access. So there might be things that we put into a braille format, for example, you know, in terms of policy, so that individuals that might have visual impairments can still see it. So looking at our entire communication effort. The other is in terms of employment, making sure that we're addressing employment in a way that individuals with disabilities are able to do their job, particularly when we look at the fact that we have an aging workforce and that there is a correlation between aging and increasing disabilities, and making sure that we're ahead of the game in terms of addressing that. And then the last area is in terms of emergency preparedness and evacuation, that emergency plans that are developed take into account or specifically address how individuals with disabilities will be evacuated from buildings when there are emergency situations, how are individuals with the broad range of disabilities that are out there, how are they being incorporated into those plans.
And a lot of times, I just participated in a program that you guys may have seen, the Shots Fired video that you see the police is kicking around about emergency planning in the event of a variety of things. And a lot of times, they're talking about quick evacuation of people out of buildings or how you're able to shelter in place. And how inclusive is that and those plans of people with different types of mobility disabilities or other types of disabilities that may be impacted by those policies and procedures?
And how do you go about collecting the information about disabilities?
Yeah. How do you collect it, but also the how do you get the individuals with disabilities take ownership of their own
exactly
to be able to effectively communicate it? And you're right. I mean, there's some confidentiality issues that are significant, and so it does present some different ways to look at these types of things that I don't know. I think that the folks in Peggy Mattis' group have really done a lot of work towards those types of things, but I think a lot of it is getting people to think about their own safety and how their condition may be impacted by a variety of things and how do they become an active participant in the whole process.
So, state talent pool review. We've been going from group to group for over almost a year now.
It feels like a long
time. So, these are the groups that we have spoken with so far, because the goal is to get, you know, the feedback. We think that we have developed a good plan because we use the plan from Duke University, for example, who had a very extensive settlement agreement with the Department of Justice and looked at some of the other institutions to sort of gone through the process and pull information together. But we're Cornell, so there could be things that are unique. So we kind of went through each one of these groups with CPP, the associate deans, we've spoken with the HR community, with the college officers group, with the admin managers, the VP of facilities services direct report, looking for anywhere that we have missed something in terms of plan.
And
then this is the rest. As you can see, in fact, we did talk with CUDA, which is the student advocate group, in terms of disabilities as well, to make sure we got some great feedback and some things we just hadn't thought about from a student perspective. So we've tried to make sure that we hit everyone. And the plan is now to go back to the executive group tomorrow to kind of share here's where we are and to see if we can move forward with actually starting to develop the teams of people who will carry out those six plans. Any questions?
I just have a question. You were
there was a question about like how we collect, you know, collecting information regarding individuals with disabilities. Does that also mention including sensory motor and cognitive disabilities? So when you define disabilities, like does that manifest itself as people with mental health issues or other, and do you work with organizations like that that would, again, I guess it's like you said, how do people define themselves as being disabled and how do you get that kind of information out?
Right. We're using the federal and state definition for disability. On the state level, it's a pretty broad definition. So it's taking into account not only mobility impairments, which is what individuals might think
that's
of.
That's the most difficult.
Right. But there are a number of what I call processing disorders as well that, you know, particularly might find within the student population, but can occur everywhere. So it is the full gamut that we're looking to incorporate.
So that's like students that have ADD and things like that.
Exactly.
As far as technology, more particularly classroom technology, are there going to be, as if this is what my vision of this would be, there would be requirements for purchasing technology equipment in support of academic classrooms, as far as a student with a disability may not be able to sit in this room and have the same experience or close to the same experience as another student. Is that what's going to happen with technology?
Well, I think the way that we're looking to address it is as technology is purchased,
right,
to make sure that the new purchasing is done in consideration of accessibility. I don't believe, budget-wise, I don't think it's part of the plan to go back and retrofit.
Right, but nothing as of yet. Because I purchase technology and I know, you know, I just know, so I try to be aware of what I'm purchasing, but
right,
until there's requirements.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. It's much easier to buy it ahead of time.
Right.
You know, a DVD and projector that can actually show subtitles,
mm-hmm,
or CC captions versus, mm-hmm, having to go back afterwards because,
right,
there's a student or a guest in that room.
Right.
Well,
that's
a great.
It's a very good.
There would always be, though, individual accommodations made,
yes,
students, staff, or faculty that might require additional technology or anything else.
Very true.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe if that equipment was, for a start, located where other units in my college architects aren't planning to go borrow, which might be.
But it's developing that type of communication plan so that people know and they can share, because a lot of times you don't realize someone else might have it and they're willing to share.
Yeah.
Any type of assistive listening systems as well, the ones that are not hardwired into a particular room, but that person may need to take advantage of that. You know, why go out and purchase it in AAP if ILR has it?
Right.
You know, and so
that. And you just work it out.
Right. Yeah. But it's part of a large development of the plan, but also, as Lynette had indicated, the educational plan and communication strategy as to what we're doing so that folks understand it.
Right.
Okay. Is there one more? Is there a place that, or do you want this information? You're looking for feedback. Is there a place that employees, students, faculty, if they notice something that is bad, that they can go and send the information?
Mm-hmm. That's an email.
An email that comes to me, actually, at accessibility@cornell.edu, okay, is something that I get a lot of questions from parents,
yes,
students. Freshman move-in day is always a busy time, you know, just asking about, and it's not only for a student with a disability, but last year, parents,
right,
who have a disability trying to make sure and be part of the whole experience for their children, but they're moving into maybe a building that's not model of accessibility,
right,
so how do they participate?
And
it's
part of it also is that, you know, we are, this plan goes beyond just our immediate community to include community in a broad sense. So even visitors who are coming to the university, we want to make sure that first of all, they know where to get information. There is actually a webpage that has information about what we're doing from a disability perspective, and that we're also accessible to people who are coming onto the campus.
Mm-hmm.
That's
right. Okay.
Lena, how do you feel that this program or this concept will play into individual ADA accommodations? Would it reduce those, or if...
I don't think it would reduce it.
Okay.
I think, if anything, it will enhance it. Because one of the things from the educational perspective is helping individuals to have a comfort level to come forward to indicate that they have a disability and can kind of go through the process. But as we are doing sort of this global effort in terms of addressing the issues, there's some things that will be addressed for individuals. For example, you know, if you put in, you know, one of the doors, the automatic doors, that's something that someone who may have had a difficulty otherwise doesn't have to worry about anymore. So there are things that are going to help, but I don't think it's going to reduce the number, because I think the population is going to continue to grow.
And it makes more people aware. As you move forward with your plan, more people are aware. And that's a big start.
Yes, I was just going to say, how are you promoting your information? And you were talking about having the female accessibility, Cornell WDU. How do you promote this to the general student population, employee population? What kind of channels are you using?
Well, the webpage that Lynette had indicated is cornell.edu/disability. But if people, is there a means that you've been using so that people know that that exists, or is that something that people have to find themselves?
It's kind of, as we're going through this strategic planning effort and kind of rolling it out, then we'll be getting more communication out about what's in place already. You know, there's been a lot of effort in terms of getting signage up around the campus that people may not be aware of. So once we can get this strategic plan approved to move forward, that's like one of the things that you'll start seeing more about, is what we're doing in terms of addressing issues related to disability.
It could be an interesting forum or something, I think, in terms of like educating HR, but at least from my experience, I've done the work in the field as well. She was saying that public educating people themselves who might be afraid to claim or own their disability for fear of discrimination.
So. Very nice. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And let us know if we can assist you in your efforts along the way.
Definitely.
And if things come up, please feel free to let us know. If you think of things or other aspects of it, would be really helpful.
We will.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
We're going to move forward with our agenda. We're going to move on to university benefits. And Jason has some information. What are you going to talk about?
Well, we do have, this is an important university committee. We have one slot open if anybody is interested.
Who's back right now?
Julie's back now. Donna Goss is on that committee. I'm going to touch base with Donna to see if she's still actively able to participate. And
I believe the open slot is the statutory slot.
Okay.
For what that's worth.
Okay.
Okay. Contract college. Statutory, we call it contract college.
Okay, thank you. Employee education, Jason?
We met yesterday at 1 p.m. at Emerson Hall. The committee brainstormed and listed concerns of three major areas of the education benefits at Cornell, and those are tuition reimbursement, employee degree program, and extramural study. It was a great committee meeting. We want to begin a formal review of the education benefits offered to employees, and we're going to begin reviewing documents at our next meeting sometime in January. I gave an update on a brief meeting that I had with Paul Bursick, Director of Benefits Services, who gave me some insight into the tuition reimbursement history, and I presented that at the meetings. We did a lot of brainstorming of different concerns and the different components that the people in the committee had. So we listed those, and we're going to start to take those concerns as we do policy and benefits review. And we focused on the big three, but we know that there are we need to identify the other educational fringe benefits like SkillSoft and different types of things that the university offers, and we want to try to glean that information from websites and get it into one document so we can share with people what your full education benefits are.
Yes, Pat?
I guess I'm trying to understand, where does children's tuition fall into this? Is it a university benefit? Is it an education, employee education?
That kind of
seems to be overlooked sometimes.
I should have mentioned that, actually. That is a big component that was mentioned in our brainstorming. So that is a component that we feel is in that realm.
Good.
So there was also some questions about spouse and domestic partner benefits that can extend. So we put those down, and we hope to meet with benefits, a representative from benefits in future meetings to review what we've found and what we've observed and see what we can polish up with before we present anything formal.
So you could meet with our office regarding child care grants, adoption assistance benefits, sort of the family work-life benefits, and David Yeh regarding military veteran benefits that kick into the educational benefits. It's a big sort of subset of the education is the money available to veterans.
All right. Great.
Thank you.
Great.
Well, thank you. People on layoff status also are able to continue educational benefits.
Yes,
thank you. Well, thank you. The ad hoc charter review met yesterday. There's minimal progress, but they're still working. Does anybody feel an urgent need to move on to any of this old business, or can it? Some of it has been touched already.
We have the room, so
we
if you want to extend for
point of order,
can we extend for 10?
I got a motion to extend a meeting for 10 seconds. Okay. If you have to leave, just go on. So we're old business, we're going to move to cost-cutting forums. Was there an update or any?
Just that we had generated about 50 ideas that got transferred into the suggestion box that are being worked on by the campus, our committee, Campus Savings and Efficiencies Committee.
Okay.
Yeah, so it went well. It went really well.
Good. Any questions for Beth? Beth did a great job at throwing this together in such a short notice. We're going to call upon her again one day when we...
So Beth, out of the three forms, if there's 50 ideas?
The ideas kept coming. The difference between the forums and the suggestion box was that there were people from the committee at the forums. And so even if 2 or 3 or 5 or 15 people showed up, they could go back and forth, and one thought generated another and another. And so I was the one taking notes. And things just kept popping up. Really good ideas.
Thank you. And I talked about the Cost Savings and Efficiencies Committee earlier. Committee staff and review. Is this what you had mentioned already, Peter? The staffing process, committee staffing review?
I mentioned during my outset part, I didn't realize.
I touched base.
We already covered it. And then I already talked about the EA priorities. We'll move on. We got 5 minutes for open forum. Anything anybody would like to bring up or talk about? Yes, sir.
I attended the Transportation Advisory Committee meeting, which this group is really doing a lot more this year than we've done in the past. Sometimes they were meeting.
Yeah.
But the you guys had been presented to Ithaca Community, and the town planning board was to give their comments by the end of the year. Back to transportation. The other things that we're looking at is transportation sustainability. And what they're doing is looking at what they call demand management. So they want to decrease the demand for parking on campus versus what's called supply management. Supply management, which is building more parking lots, which is not what they want to do. It is noted that most students walk, and most undergrads take the bus. There's been a big effort on TCAD's part to redo the bus stops. You'll see maps there now. So if you don't know what bus to take, hopefully the map will help you. Some of the stops really only have a very sketchy display of what buses do stop there and the times, but they are working on it very diligently. So if you see anything wrong with the schedule, do call in and let them know or let me email. I've been quite a bit of emailing with them. They also want to look at what the community can do so that bikers and walkers can actually get to campus we focus quite a bit on what campus needs to do, but the community hasn't made it real accessible so people can even walk to get here. Maybe you get your bike here in order to ride on campus and if you want to get home. The UA is also taking some action on that as well, looking at the biking and walking. We know that we need pedestrian maps. It's been suggested that there should be signs and arrows, just like if you were walking in a botanical garden, something that's not real bold and fitting with the setting.
Well, thank you very much. If it ever comes up and you have an opportunity, one issue I see in buses as the commute is farther away is the bus. Like Spencer, for instance, bus leaves at 7 in the morning from Spencer, and it's like roughly 4:30 it's back. And it's, to me, employees work till 4:35.
Yeah.
So only if you're that, you work that earlier shift, I have to stay longer, so I can't even utilize the bus this month. And if you miss that one bus, you're done.
You're done.
You don't have a ride home. I don't know if anything could be worked out.
Well, there's always a possibility, because what I just took an active part in is we were losing our bus service to Watkins Glen, and it's done as of the end of December. But thanks to many efforts and many voices,
it's back.
TCAP's taken over January 1st. But that's been a long 2-year fight, and it was going down the tubes real fast. But there's two other members here on the campus that work very hard. And voices through the email and knowing that
if they want employees and students and faculty to ride the bus, the means has to be there. Right.
What communications have there been about that yet? Because I've been hearing from one of the staff in our office who lives in Washington Glen. She'd be very interested in this.
Yes, I haven't spoken publicly about it because we're still getting down to the final schedule. And it's been a matter of, is it going to stop at East Hill Plaza? Which, as of today, the message is no, they're not going to stop at East Hill Plaza. It should be leaving the Vet Tower to go home at 3:30. And the second bus, which we're just thrilled that we saved two buses, we were just bussing home one, which means, just to keep our public transportation, but we're actually going to have two buses between 4:30 and 5 is what I'm going to say. I have an idea when it's going to be, but it's not definite yet.
And
coming out this week.
Do you have any idea, if TCAD is taking this over, does that mean that people with an OmniRide pass will now have...
OmniRide pass will get you to Enfield. But there will be a Schuyler pass, and if you want to go past Enfield, you're then going into Schuyler County. So, and that's just a matter of they haven't really figured this out either, how people are going to buy passes, because not everybody is a Cornell employee, and TCAP's working that out as well. But if they buy the Schuyler pass, then they can ride any TCAP bus.
Just a real quick question. We've been having some discussions in Geneva about some sort of transportation public between Geneva campus and Ithaca campus. We have grad students, undergrads, faculty, staff that constantly are moving back and forth between the two campuses.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if you can give me some guidance. Who do we talk to? How can we get involved? What is there that we can do to maybe enable TCAP to get involved between Ontario and
Ontario County?
We're Ontario, but we also go through Seneca, so we have a couple of counties we're talking about. But I think that overall we would have a significant amount of users if we could just figure out how to make that all happen.
Because this whole thing is very intricate, working with state funds, federal funds, and then funds for the vehicle. And funds for administration.
Oh, yeah.
It's been very tedious.
But if they want us to not commute.
But here in the case where it took the people, it was dying very quickly, very fast. And if Schuyler County legislators so much have said, why should we bother worrying about how you get to work?
Right.
That was the answer we got.
Schuyler County,
right.
Why should you bother voting for it?
Well, thank you. Anything else quick or?
Motion to adjourn.
Have a motion. Actually, before we. Can somebody tell me how I'm supposed to properly adjourn a meeting? Do I take a motion, take a second, and vote? Or once I get a second, it's done?
No,
vote.
It's a motion.
It's a motion.
So I have a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second. All in favor of adjourning the meeting?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. Over.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.